Хөрхөн охид trap сонсон trap сонсон trap сонсон trap сонсон trap донсон trap донсон trap Түүний сонсон хөгжим дур булаа Дадаж дуудан дур булаа мөрөлдөө
Bueno.
Is this Big Sexy?
Hey, what's up? You ever heard a Mexican answer the phone?
How are you, man?
Doing all right. How you doing?
Good. How was your weekend?
It wasn't bad, man. wasn't bad. Are we on now?
Yep.
Okay. I want to say, man, I want to say before we got started on anything that if I talk slow or anything... on this one, if I sound slow, it's not that I'm drunk. Well, I am drunk, but that's not why. No, I'm just kidding. But I listened back to the last time I was on, and I talk so fast sometimes I like sound like an auctioneer on cocaine. And I would never want anyone to think, you know, badly of me like that. I would ever be an auctioneer. So, you know, I wouldn't. I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression of me. But no, I really do. Me and Matt Mitrione seem to always have a contest of who can talk the fastest on a podcast. So I'm trying
to. I'm right there with you, man. You know how many times like I've been on stage telling a joke and I'm like, I thought that was funny, and people were like, what? Especially like if I'm like in the Midwest or down south or even older people, like I'm like, man, if I just would have given it a little bit more time, I would have gotten a laugh. That happened.
Yeah.
That's like the story of my life. I think it's for me because my family, nobody listens to each other at all. We cut each other off all the time.
Right.
So if you didn't talk fast, you were not going to get heard.
Right.
You know? So
yeah, mine's probably just the cocaine. But, no,
by the way,
kidding.
I like an auctioneer on cocaine. I can't, like, as if it's not bad enough being an auctioneer.
Right,
auctioneer,
yeah.
On cocaine. And
I've
by the way,
I've never tried cocaine, fortunately. I've always stayed away from it. I normally pronounce it cocaina because I've worked Scarface so many times, but I've actually never tried it. A girl warned me once I knew that he used to be hooked on it. She said it was... She said cocaine is like, compare the first time you ever had sex with, you know, 7 years old. When you were 7 years old, it was Christmas morning. And I said, man, I told her I know exactly what that feels like because I did have sex when I was 7 years old on Christmas morning. So,
did you really?
No, I'm just joking. That would be weird. And probably cause for law
enforcement. You have the funniest, ethics I've ever heard in my life. Like, your ethics are so funny. Like, it's like you won't do cocaine... But you'll take 19 different kinds of steroids, right?
If it was performance enhancing, then I guess that would be a possible last scenario. So.
And then I've never seen a guy do more, bang more, like strippers, like girls, crazy, blah, blah, blah. Like, I mean, you just like, I remember the first time I met you, like, if you come to Indiana, I will have every slut in Indiana come to your show, right?
Right.
And then, but then you'll break up with the girl if she goes to a nightclub.
Right.
It's like...
I am a, a riddle wrapped inside something. I don't know what it's called. God, I blew that one.
So,
what does that say?
You have your own code of ethics is what it is. Like you have.
I really do.
Yeah. 1,000%. But then also you, somebody was like picking a fight with you the other day and online, and you said that he fell out of his mom's womb and right onto the spectrum. And I was like,
yeah,
oh my God.
Yeah, that was off the top of my head too. You could tell there was something wrong with that guy. Just by that. Just by attempting to have a fight with me online, he was obviously retarded. But no one can. You can't. I'm still undefeated on the internet after all these years. I can't be beaten.
One of my favorite things is when people try to pick fights with you online, they don't realize that you will go to the throat. Like you don't care, and then they go, "Hey, I'm just kidding. We're friends, right?" And you're like, "No, we're not friends." And then you're like, "But hey, it's kind of even." No, it's not even.
Right? It's not over. It will never be over. What happens is people will try to slide in like a jab at me, like something really personal, you know, like about my kids or something. And then I'll send them a direct message. I'll be like, "Hey, I'll give you the opportunity to delete that or whatever. If not, I'm going to really hurt your feelings, you know. And I don't want to do that. Like I tell them, I always send them like an instant message. privately. Like, I don't want to hurt your feelings. I don't want to have you, like, cry about it or whatever. Like, you really should probably delete that. Like, I don't know you like that. We're not friends. You don't say stuff about my kids. I mean, I don't want anybody saying stuff about my kids anyway, but certainly not if I don't know you. And it wasn't a funny joke, you know? And then they're like, you don't scare me. Do your best. I'm like, you really don't want it. I promise. You don't want me to do that. And then they keep at it, and then I end up devastating them, and then they start cussing me out, saying they're going to kill me, and then they block me, all within 20 minutes every time, because I just immediately can go to their Facebook page, and then I'll find someone they look like a retarded version of, like, or like their kid looks like, you know, so this or that, and I'll start putting it on there and start putting comparison pictures, you know, of how their son looks like a troll in some movie or whatever, and then they can all sit and they usually threaten me to kill me, like they're going to kill me, and then they block me. But then I claim victory and try to find some other form of social media to contact them on to continue the beating.
No, but, dude, it's brutal. It's brutal, dude. You're so, I mean, I wouldn't want to fuck with you online. Like, I wouldn't fuck with you. I mean, like, you're my friend, but like, I'm a professional comedian. I'm like, dude, this, you're one of those guys that, like, I'm like, nothing is off limits with this dude. Like, you know, but you're right, though. It's always, you never are the guy starting the fight, ever.
No.
It's always, I mean, somebody starting with you.
That's, well, what will happen is someone will say something to me that I would never say to them. You know, that's what will happen. Someone will say something to me, and I'm like, wow, I would never just randomly go on someone's page and say that about them personally, someone I didn't know. And maybe they feel like they know me because they've been following me online or something like that. But they'll say, I mean, I had a guy the other day say something like, I made a joke about something, and he was like, yeah, well, he said something, and I sent a message like, hey, I don't want you talking about my kids, this and that or whatever. And so he immediately goes back and says something about, yeah, I can't wait till my son's banging your daughter in 2 years or whatever. He goes, I can't wait to see that. I'm like, why would you want to see that? You want to watch your kid have sex with somebody? That's weird. And then warned him again. I was like, dude, seriously, stop. I'm going to hurt your feelings. Like, just warned him, you know, privately again. And he went after it. And then I just kept on and kept on and kept on. And I had, before long, everyone starts following the thread. Like, people start joining in, tagging. So he checks us out. And he gets pretty brutal sometimes. But sadly, I never feel
remorseful. People don't realize
like,
that.
I really
like,
don't. Maybe I'm a sociopath,
like,
but I don't. I was always the guy who, if someone spit in my food, let's say like at a restaurant, and I stabbed them, I wouldn't feel bad. I feel like that's what you get. You know, like, you don't, like, you wouldn't have spit in my food, it wouldn't have happened. But I never go looking for trouble, ever. Like, never wanted to be a bully, never wanted to actually abhor bullies, as you've seen in person before, when guys try to, those guys over in Illinois try to bully that one little dirty kid or whatever. Like, I can't stand bullies, but I love being the one to straighten them out. But yeah, once people mess with me, I give them a warning and they get one, and after that, that's the end of it. So.
No, dude, seriously, like, you are one of the nicest guys I know, and you're a very, very loyal friend. Like, I think you drove like 5 hours to come see my comedy show one time. Like, you're one of those dudes that, like, if you don't like somebody, no matter how famous or whatever, you don't care. But
no.
If you like somebody, no matter how much society deems them like unimportant, you're like, no, I like that person. That's my friend. You're very, but your whole career, which you don't give yourself enough credit. I mean, how many guys could beat Mark Hunt in 49 seconds? And how many guys could accomplish what you have? But one of the funniest stories about you is when you were trying to get into the UFC and you would take pictures of like, what, you next to Mitrione or something? And you'd be like 10 times the size of him. Like, what exactly was that story again?
Well, I created such a larger than life persona online. You know, I would say I could run a 4.240, and then someone would say I could, and I would bet them $50,000 I could, but they had to put the money up front. I was always getting people to back down. Obviously, I couldn't do the things I claimed I could do 99% of the time, but I would always claim I could do something. And so then when we started taking pictures, like with Matt Mitrione, I would stand on something to make myself like 8 or 10 inches taller, so it looked like I was, you know, 7'6" or something. And in every picture, I would always make sure I was way taller than everybody. And so, like, the first time I met Ben Rothwell, he goes, I thought you were supposed to be, like, 7'2 or 7'3. And I was like, I never claimed that. He said, yeah, but every picture I saw, he goes, you're like my height. But it was so funny because I would always just troll people, making them think that I was anything they talked about, I claimed. Like, someone one time was talking to me for a picture. It was a pretty good portrait. And I was like, I told him I could have done better. You know, it's on the underground. They're like, oh, yeah, I bet. And I was like, you've not seen any of my work. And I started stealing people's work off, you know, the internet and posting as if it were mine, photoshopping my signature on it and things like that. So my whole persona was supposed to be like Ric Flair in the 80s mixed with The Rock in the 90s, like early 90s, you know, or whatever. So I was always just doing it for fun because I really liked it. I had kind of retired back then, so I had entirely too much time on my hands. So after I sold my business, so I just like to troll people online, and sometimes it's been hours a day doing it, which didn't say much for my life, but I was also married to an evil woman at the time. It was my only escape. So, So,
well, I gotta say, I mean, your girl now is drop dead gorgeous, but some of the women before her, oh my God. And like the pictures you would show me, I was like, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a more consistent group of tens in my life.
Yeah, the funny thing was, two people would always act like, oh yeah, anybody can just. I actually had a girl one time. It was funny. A girl I had dated that I just liked her. I mean, she wasn't bad looking, but I just kind of liked her personality, you know. And so she ended up getting on my nerves, so I cut her loose. Just texted her, told her, okay, we'll lose my number, because she got mouthy with me. And she goes, well, good luck ever doing better than me. And I'm like, I'm sure I'll be fine. And she's like, no, seriously, I would love to see the last couple of girls you dated before me. I'm sure they were real, you know, winners. And I was like, I can promise you, you don't want to see the last couple of girls I dated before you. Like, I can promise you, you don't want that. She just kept at it and at it. Well, so while she was still talking shit to me, I made a collage of the last 10 girls I dated, you know. And I sent her a collage with a little guy. I don't know, he's a rapper or somebody. There's a real famous meme where there's a rapper that says, you mad? He's like smiling real big, pointing at the camera. And so I made him in the middle with a collage of women surrounding him that I had dated. And the girl goes, like, she texts me back. She goes, oh, my gosh, I'm so sure. Because I told her, I said, well, how about the last couple? What about the last 10 I dated? And sent her the picture. She goes, oh, I'm so sure anybody can go to Instagram, find a bunch of models, like Instagram models that aren't famous, and take their pictures and make a collage out of it. And she goes, look, I used to date The Rock. And she sends me a picture of him. And she goes, I used to date Channing Tatum. She sends me a picture of him. She goes, it's real easy. And I was like, well, I can't really prove what I'm saying. I don't know how I can prove it. She's like, exactly, because it didn't happen, douchebag. And I said, well, I told her, and by this time I'm still making another collage, right? Because I know I'm giving a little time between each text. And I said, I guess you're right, other than if I did date him, how do you explain this? And sent her the same collage with the guy in the middle saying, you mad, but with me in a picture with each girl I had dated, like in the same spot in the collage. Wow. So like one sitting on my lap, one giving me a kiss on the cheek, which I might say that my current girlfriend was in that collage. So she made first page collage, which is pretty impressive. I tell her all the time that she doesn't have to feel insecure because she was first page collage, which she doesn't really like. But I sent her that, and the girl, she didn't say anything to me for 3 days. And then she finally sent me a text back that said, I don't know why you ever wasted your time with me. I can't compete with that. And I felt kind of bad. I thought about it. So I just sent her back one and said, yep, me neither. And that was how we left it.
Nice. Dude, the things that, like, the screenshots you used to send me with you and girls were, like, the things you would say to people. And I'm like, why? I'm like, what is going on?
Like, they were. I still would love to turn that into a book one day. That's when I hated women. Like, back in the day, I got to where I really, you know how, like, someone like Rosie O'Donnell hates men? I had gotten to the point where I hated women that much. So, like, maybe not as much. Like, I guess there's degrees. Like, the highest degree, the Rosie O'Donnell degree for a man is probably like the guy who has the serial killer man who goes around and, you know, kidnaps women and kills them because he hates his mom deep down or something like that. So, I was probably like one stage, not quite that far. I was like one stage, like, behind. So I was like maybe the guy behind the camera in a porn movie who's like, oh yeah, choker, like the real aggressive guy who really hates women, it seems like, for some reason. I was like at that guy's level of hating women. So that was a good joke. But anyway, that said, I got to a point where I didn't want to even date anybody. And this is why I was still, you know, super hot on UFC. I didn't want to date anybody. So I would just see how quickly I could get rid of a girl who I had met or who had messaged me, or maybe I was talking to him. And so I would just send him the most ridiculous things ever, you know, or whatever. This girl was like, I mean, I have screenshots still of all of them. But I would always screenshot it the last time they communicated with me. Like, one off the top of my head was a girl that said, I said, are you still working at such and such place? She goes, no. And I said, why not? And she said, really poor management. They're all idiots. And I said, well, they never should have made you a manager to begin with. you know, she just stopped responding at that point. So I would screenshot it, and I have a couple hundred of them. I wanted to turn into a book one day. I don't know if anybody else.
Yeah, but then they were like molested. There were like molested jokes and like incest jokes in there. It was like, it's like race jokes. Some of the things I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, I had some good ones back in the day.
Oh my God. They were hilarious.
I told a girl one time that I asked her how old she was, and, she said 19, and I said, oh, that's the same. That's my type. And she goes, really? I said, yeah, only 3 years too old. And
oh, my God.
Yeah, she never responded. So apparently she thought I wanted to date a 16-year-old. It was supposed to be funny.
A couple of them did respond, though. They were like, "Aha, you're so funny," or something. And then you would make it worse.
Right.
I was like, oh. I was like you would like double down, and I'm like, oh. But the girl that you're currently with, your girlfriend, she like gets you though.
She what? I can hear you.
She gets you.
Oh, you know, yeah, like she definitely does, man. She's awesome. I couldn't chase her away with anything offensive. Like when I first met her, she thought it was hilarious. So I would say stuff like that to her when I was texting her and stuff, and she always got the jokes. So we definitely have the same sense of humor, which helps a lot, especially if you're trying to date someone like me, which it would have to be nightmarish at certain points, I would think.
No, I'm the same way. Like my wife will be sleeping, and I'll like whisper in her ear. I'll be like, "Anal sex," you know, and then she'll whisper back, "Turn over," and I'm like, "Yeah, that's my wife."
Yeah,
of course.
Sounds about right. I love your wife, man. She's awesome. I've met her, I think, what, 4 or 5 times now, and sweetest girl you could ever want to meet, man. I was a little nervous, you know, when you first met her because you guys got married pretty quick, right?
Yeah, we got married we got engaged real quick because like I got her pregnant after like 2 months, and she was like, "I'm not gonna keep the baby, or I'm only gonna have the baby if we're married," and then she had a miscarriage, and I was like, but I was like, "Nah, she's the one." So, Now, by the way, at my wedding, I never asked you about this, right? So, like, you were sitting next to Scott Baio,
right? Thankfully,
And you said and you were like debating whether you should say something to him. I could see you debating, but I didn't see you say anything. Then on your Facebook, you said you went up to him and you said, "Hey, Chachi," or like, "Who's in charge," or something.
Me and my girlfriend we've been arguing that entire weekend. And sometimes when you travel, man, she came up from San Diego. She was living there to go to that wedding. I come out and pick her up, and you know how Facebook is awesome at starting drama. Like, who is this girl liking your picture? And I'm like, well, who's this guy liking yours? And it started, you know, on the way to the wedding.
Right.
On our 2.5-hour drive or 3-hour drive from San Diego. And so we were fighting there all night, and I was kind of in a bad mood by the time I got there just because we've been fighting. And I hate fighting at events like that or on vacations. It's like, I just want to break. Like, it's be nice, at least during this. Same fighting for a different time. But we had been fighting, and so it was getting even almost uncomfortable at the table because we were saying stuff back and forth to each other. So I said, "Let's go." You know, we were going out. You had like a beautiful venue there, but they had an area out back where the there was, I don't know, it was like a castle in that place, but they had a place where the restrooms were and like a little entertainment hall or something. I said, "Come back here and talk to me. I don't want to argue in front of people, you know?" So we go back there. It's just kind of me and her standing back there in this area, and we're going back and forth arguing. It kind of gets more and more heated to where I was glad we weren't in front of people. And then around the corner comes Scott Baio, as he's walking around, and I hadn't seen him yet since we've been there. I was like, "Holy crap, that's Scott Baio!" You know, because this happens early on in the reception. It's like, "It's Scott Baio," and so we're arguing, and she can't see him. Like my girlfriend can't see him, only I can see him. And he can tell he's a little concerned. Like, he's looking at us as he's walking by. Like, "Are you guys physically fighting back here or what?" Because I was kind of like being loud, you know, yelling at her. And he kind of looked at me, and I looked at him, and I said, "Charles, would you mind helping us out here?" Because I don't know, it just seemed like the thing to say, and he just looked at me like he had no idea what I was talking about, and I thought that would break the tension with my girlfriend, but she's too young to know what Charles in charge was. So I was like, "That was Scott Baio, you know, from Charles in Charge." And she's like, "What?" And I was like, "Chachi."
Dude, I got my...
And she was like, "What?" Dude, so she didn't know about Happy Days either. So I explained it to her, and then we had a good rest of the time. So
my baby's sleeping on me right now, but I want to just die laughing, but then she'll wake up. But that's hilarious.
Yeah. You don't want that.
Just so you know, that is absolutely hilarious. Now, you are a big comedy fan, and I keep telling you to do stand-up comedy because I think you would murder it out there. Have you seen any good comics lately that you want to talk about? Or?
Oh, yeah. I like this new guy. Actually, a couple. I love Theo Vaughn, which a lot of people don't know who he is yet. I don't think he's just now getting on there, maybe knowing from Joe Rogan's podcast, but I did happen to see, I was watching a podcast today, actually, and Brendan Schaub said that he's always wanted to be a stand-up comic since he was 7 years old. That was always the plan. He literally said that on the Impulsive podcast. He said he's always wanted to be a stand-up comic. It was always his goal, and fighting sports was just a means to an end to get him to be a stand-up comic, which was ironic because I remember him saying the same thing for years, that he always wanted to be an NFL player. And he never dreamed he would get into comedy. But he said at 7 years old, his dad told him, "Listen, you need to give up these stand-up comedy dreams. You're too athletic and too big to be wasting your time goofing around. You need to be a pro athlete," like his dad said, which kind of think that's probably the best advice anyone ever gave him, because if you've seen his stand-up, he probably should have just picked football or fighting. But he put out a recent clip of his stand-up, which someone has added in a laugh track for him. It's the most ridiculous. I start sending people like, is this funny at all? Tell me, am I just a hater? Because I don't hate any other comedian. Like, I don't, I can't think of anybody I don't like. I don't think Larry the Cable Guy's funny. I got a funny story about him. But I don't think Larry the Cable Guy's funny, but I don't, whatever, to other people, maybe is. So I sent it to people, and I'm like, Schwab's idea of stand-up comedy is to be like, anyone see this Michael Jackson thing? What the fuck? Hey, did anybody hear about this Jesse Smollett thing? What the fuck's up with that? Hey, did anybody, like, there's no punchline. It's just like, it reminds me of Cliff on Cheers. I don't know if you ever saw that episode where his punchline and everything is just, what's up with that? Like, that's his punchline for everything. And so it's like, if you go to the comment section on Schaub's thing, it's like the most brutal 99%. People are like, this is supposed to be funny. What is going on here? Like, this guy has a Showtime special, like this and that. And it's not even, I don't even hate on a guy for trying something or going after something, taking advantage. I don't care. But the part that kills me is he actually thinks, like, he's like, yeah, I was between Chappelle and Eddie Murphy last night, you know, at the Comedy Store. You know, that's a little tough, you know, to keep the crowd going between those two. And, someone asked him about Blake Griffin trying stand-up comedy. And they were like, who do you think's better at stand-up, you or Blake Griffin? He was like, bro, are you kidding me? I've sold out shows all over the country. Blake Griffin's an amateur. He needs to stick to his jump shot. Like, dude, are you kidding?
Wow,
like,
really? He said that?
That's why I've never liked Schaub. Even when he was in the UFC, like, when I was in the UFC, I knew about where I stood. You know, like, I trained with really good dudes. I know that if Jake O'Brien beats me up in practice, and Cain Velasquez beat Jake O'Brien in a minute and a half, that I'm probably not going to do very well with Cain Velasquez. Like, I'm a realist, you know, like, I can be honest with myself.
Right.
You watch The Ultimate Fighter, and Schaub, two fights into his fight career, and Trevor Whitman's telling him, you know, you're the best in the world, right? And Schaub's like, hell yeah, I am. Like, really? You really are? Like, you believe that two fights in, you're the best in the world? And confidence is great, but there's a thin line between confidence and being completely delusional. So that's what I just feel like they asked him on that, podcast, has he read any good books lately? He's like, well, I'm reading The History of the Comedy Store. I'm reading Robin Williams' biography. I'm reading, you know, all the people, all my heroes. I'm reading their stuff, Eddie Murphy's biography, Dave Chappelle's biography, you know, all the guys I've always looked up to my whole life. Like, your whole life, does that consist of just when Rogan talked you out of fighting anymore? Because that's when you became a stand-up comic. So, like I said,
do you think he's one of these guys?
I'm not jealous because I don't want to be a comedian. Like, I like to make people laugh, but I would rather write comedy than perform it. But like I said, maybe I'm just being a hater. But I don't know. I can't stand when I didn't like Schaub on The Ultimate Fighter, but I liked Roy Nelson. Roy Nelson is every bit as confident as anybody in the world when it comes to fighting, but Roy can back it up. Like, he has the, you know, skill to pay the bills, as they say. That rhymed unintentionally. But yeah, Schaub's comedy, if you haven't seen it, I suggest to watch it, or just watch Dave Chappelle's mannerisms that he stole, because he hits the microphone on his thigh every time he tells a joke. He gets laughing at his own joke in the middle of it. Like the Michael Jackson joke, he laughs four or five times for 5-6 seconds each time, just at himself. He couldn't get the joke out. And I'm like, dude, I know that stand-up comics tell the same joke 1,000 times. It didn't make you laugh that hard the 997th time, you know? So, like I said, can't hate on a guy for going out and taking advantage of what he's given or anything like that. It's just, let's talk reality and don't go out bragging about your Showtime special that you wouldn't have if it weren't for Joe Rogan. Let's be honest.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's really the podcast. I mean, he didn't have to really go, obviously, do it the standard way. And, you know, a lot of times I think he's just telling stories that he told on his podcast on stage to his podcast fans, you know. But, you know, also a lot of times it's not the first hour that you have, it's the second hour, you know.
Right, right.
But he's also, like, a master of, like, lowering expectations.
Right.
So I wonder if he did that on purpose. Like, he put out a tape that he didn't think was that great, so then everyone and then his special is that much better. Like,
right.
Maybe.
Well, I'll tell you what for sure, I'll give him credit for it. I really do. I mean this with all sincerity. He is definitely a master at hooking his wagon to the right, you know, horse or whatever. Like, the Theo Vaughn guy is really funny on podcasts. All of a sudden, Schaub has a podcast with Theo Vaughn. You know, like, being on Rogan as much as you can. Like, if you were on Joe Rogan as much as Brendan Schaub was, you would have 5 Showtime specials. Like, you personally, I'm saying, would have them by now, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, I know. I just, that's just not me. I can't pretend to be friends. Not that I'm not friends with Joe Rogan, but I'm not one of those guys just going to hang out and then hopefully to be accepted into some kind of clique. And I'm just not one of those guys that just hangs out at clubs if I'm not booked at them. You know, I'd rather work on my craft, and eventually it's going to take me a longer road, but at least I'll get there on my own merit, you know, versus like aligning yourselves with people who are successful and then hoping that their success rubs up to your success. But hey, look, it's working for him. So you can't say it's not working for him.
Yeah, I can't blame for that. It's just like, what are you going to do to sell yourself out to? That's what I was never willing to do, man. I wouldn't go. I wouldn't move when my kids were little, when I was trained to fight. I would have been much better off going out and training out Extreme Coutures or going out and training at Jackson's or something. But my kids, I had joint custody of them, and my son would beg me. Well, if I left for 3 or 4 days, my son would be like, Dad, please take me with you. Please let me go. Not necessarily because his mom was a terrible person. I mean, she is, but not because that wasn't why necessarily. I'm just joking, but kind of. But my son would beg me, and I used to tell him, hey, if I had to be gone for like 4 or 5 weeks, could you do that? My son was like 7, 6 at the time. He'd be like, Dad, please go, please just take me with you. You know, and I wasn't willing to trade that, hurting him to be a better fighter. You know, I was like, I'll just do the best with what I can. The same way, like I would very likely never make it being famous or in Hollywood or anything, because I'm not going to kiss people's asses to do it or have sleep with, you know.
And you also have morals. I mean, you're a guy who doesn't cheat on your wife. You don't fuck your friends over. You don't. I'm not saying Schaub does. I have no idea
right.
about his personal life. But I'm just saying that I know you are a person with convictions. And a lot of times, you know, there are people that are not like that. They're willing to, you know, sell their firstborn to get as far as they can in their career-wise. But, you know... Yeah, you know, Hollywood's a roller coaster, and I could name 10, 20, 30, 50 people that were like the hottest thing in show business, and then all of a sudden they weren't, and
right.
because they didn't have the art form, and they didn't have the craft. I mean, look at fighters. How many fighters have we seen all of a sudden? They're like, this is the next big thing, and then they're not. You know,
right? That's the way it goes, man. And if you don't, if you're not, you know, styling, you know, like. Like Schaub, I heard Schaub call himself the CM Punk of comedy, which I thought that was a pretty good analogy, except CM Punk can fight. No, I'm just kidding. I thought I like more like Tori Spelling more so than CM Punk. Like it's who you know that kept, like they said that Tori Spelling went in an audition for, I'm showing my age right now, but for Beverly Hills 90210. Oh, she auditioned over under a fake name. Like, yeah, I'm sure she wouldn't have gotten the role, you know, either way.
Of
like,
course. Yeah, yeah, but she knows show, that, you know, though. Like Tori knows that, though. Yeah.
So it's up. I mean, like I said, I don't fault people for taking advantage of stuff. It's just like let's be honest about how you got where you are. Let's not say, you know, like you didn't, like in Schaub's case, you didn't want to be a stand-up comic from the time you were 7. Like that never happened. You never said that until you became a stand-up comic. Never heard you say it in a million interviews I've watched. I used to watch guys' interviews all the time. I guarantee you, like I get told on a weekly basis that I should try stand-up comedy by anytime. Even the comics, you know, that I met when I would go to your shows and back, I would be back there telling about when I met R. Kelly or some ridiculous story. And they'd be like, why don't you do stand-up comedy? I was like, it's just so much travel. You know, I said, I don't like to be away from my kids, you know, and stuff like that. I hate being in front of crowds. I would like to write. I just don't like to do it. But I guarantee you, Schaub didn't get told that twice or three times in his entire life. Like, who watched The Ultimate Fighter when Schaub was on? Thought, that guy should try stand-up comedy. Nobody. Like, it didn't happen.
No,
you know?
But I think, honestly, sometimes people, like... Like, I know one of my biggest problems with auditions was I overthink, you know, and like I take myself out of the game. I like worry too much. I panic. I have anxiety attacks. And by the time I get there, it's like I fucked myself up. I can't tell you how many times I've done that. But
yeah.
Like Schaub's one of those dudes where it's like almost like believing your own hype and like ignorance is bliss, I think, in some ways.
It is. Where, no, it absolutely is. it can be that way in fighting too. Like when I was undefeated still, and Monty Cox was my agent. He used to manage 5 of the 6 UFC champions. After I lost my first fight, he said, "Listen, you need to make sure this doesn't happened to you, or what happens to other guys doesn't happen to you." And he said, and I was like, "What's that?" He goes, "Most guys when they're undefeated start to believe they can't be beaten. You know, like even if they're getting beaten, but God will intervene somehow, or something will happen. I'll find a way to pull it out. I'll win." You start becoming delusional, and I actually did when I beat Hunt. And then I almost submitted Struve a minute in. I was like, I cannot believe this is this easy. You know, like as I was getting ready to submit Struve, I remember thinking, I cannot believe I'm about to submit him and be 2-0 in the UFC and 12-0 overall, you know, or whatever. And, of course, I didn't submit him, and he punched me in the face 100 times, but there is definitely something said for that confidence that comes. You know, a lot of guys, if you watch any boxer, Tyson or anybody else, after they lose the first time, they're never the same. Or you watch basketball players or football players, after they tear their ACL or their Achilles tendon, they're never the same again. They could get just as fast again, just as quick, just as agile, but they're never mentally. There's something there, you know? And I really do. I'm a firm believer in if you're delusional like that, it can hurt you, but it can definitely help you too, you know, because that confidence comes through. And even if it's misplaced or unwarranted confidence, it can help.
Yeah,
but you're,
I don't know,
man,
if it's,
I'm
so,
not just
being
harassed, but you are the least Hollywood guy I've ever met that lives out in Hollywood. You know what I mean? As far as like, I typically don't like people like that. I've known a lot of people that were famous or semi-famous. And, usually, once they're done with you, what they can get from you, you never hear from them again. They don't return text. You don't talk to them. I don't want to call any UFC, any MMA, broadcasters or journalists out, but there were certain ones that were my best friend when I was the hottest thing in the UFC. I mean, it hit me up weekly. Hey, how you doing? Just checking on you. How's this going, that and this and that. And so I get cut. I don't even get a call back. I don't get a return text. And I'm like, you know, at some point I'm like, I thought we were friends. Like, maybe I'm retarded, but I thought we were friends. You know, like I literally did.
They write
a hit piece on me when I fight the Pujanowski guy over there. I beat him the first time. Second time, I can make 100 excuses, but he ends up beating me by decision. And they're like writing an article about me, about like what a joke the fight was, what a joke my career's become. The fight was obviously fixed, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, like, you're getting personal with me, attacking me just to get a few more views by writing some controversial, when it wasn't like light-spirited kidding or joking. Like, you're actually trying to make me look bad now just to get people to do that. And I was under the impression until that happened, he and I were friends, you know? So, he doesn't know my name anymore, you know?
No, Ariel Helwani is one of those dudes.
I'm going to rhyme with that.
No, man, there are so many guys, out there, and I know who they are, that, like, tomorrow, which could happen if all of a sudden I get a TV show, HBO says we're doing the Adam Hunter show. These guys that didn't talk to me for 10 years they were all like, they're like professional dick riders is what they are, you know? and then they show up and they basically eat everything off your plate. Then they leave and they go for the next person. And,
right.
But I can't worry about those people. All I have to know is those people. I have to know though, that like, cause there's a part of me that is like that. I'm like, dude, wait till I get my fucking show. I'm not helping out any of these guys. You know, like there is that. I tell myself that. It's like that scene in Batman when and like the one where he's like holding the guy that like trained him, and he's like, I'm not gonna kill you, but I don't have to save you. That was one of like my favorite lines.
Right.
And like these, and like same thing. I'm not gonna be a dick to you, but I'm not gonna save you, because I know a guy who was one of the biggest comics in the world, and he was getting trashed by everybody. All the alternative comics that you know were just taking shots at the guy left and right. So he started calling people into his movie, having them read for his movie, and then telling them to go fuck themselves after their audition.
That's awesome. That's awesome. He must have read the Donald Trump book on Getting Even.
But then it really backfired on him, because then he became one of the least guys. So it's like, you can't let that, you know, it's like you kind of have to just do it to yourself, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you, because a part of me was like, that's awesome, good for him, but then, you know, you could really fuck yourself by doing that too. You just have to have to just know. But as far as you go, Sean, I mean, the sky's the limit for you, man. Like, honestly, like, the joke you gave me, I had a threesome one time. It was me, a dude, and a dude, right? That destroys that. And like, you wrote that, and you could write jokes like that all day long. Like, it's insane. You just need the right person behind you, you know, or the person to give you a shot, or you just need to like venture out, you know, like do your own thing. Cause no one's going to help you, but once you help yourself, once people realize that you don't need them, is when they want to do you favors. It's
right.
Fucking crazy. I mean,
yeah. Well, actually, the good news is I actually am starting a podcast for the next 2 months. I've already got the my camera, my lighting, everything ordered. I'm going to do that at my house. I think I'm going to do a video podcast. I was going to start with an audio, but I think I'll be more likely to do it better and more often if it's a video one. So I may still go back to audio, but I think right now I'm gonna stick with the video podcast and start doing that. And I know, okay, I'm late on the train getting on, but there's just so many people out there now I see making money doing it. And I'm like, gosh, that guy's not funny at all. And I know a lot of it's, you know, is getting your name out there and getting a start. And the first 200 episodes, probably nobody will listen to. But I know every time I come on your show, or if I went on the MMA Hour and Roasted Fighters or whatever, I get an absolutely ridiculous response. I mean, like, you know, hundreds of people messaging me, like, why don't you do a podcast? Like, I would listen every week, which maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't. But I finally, you know, decided I want to I was talking to my brother about it, actually my older brother, who's, you know, smarter than me about a lot of stuff as far as, I don't know, he's more of a realist, I guess, than I was in a lot of ways. But I talked to him the other day, and I said, I used to talk to my dad, but he's dead. Thanks for bringing that up. No, but since my dad died, I talked to my older brother, and I said, what would you do if you were me? Because I really do want to do something with my life still, you know? Like, I don't want to just sit back and, you know, live off of rental income properties, or, you know, making, I buy and sell, like, stuff and ship it out of the country still. Sound like I was talking about drugs. But right. No, I, in the old business I used to be in, I still do some of that sometimes, where I can, you know, buy wholesale loads of, you know, retail merchandise and ship it out of the country. I do that on occasion and make some money here or there. I was going to start flipping houses again, but I asked my brother, I said, what would you do if you were me? And he said, he told me, they said, I don't understand why you never wrote a book or tried to do the podcast or tried to stand up or do something like that. That's by far what you're best at. You know, he said, I don't know why you wouldn't. Like, you do that. He says, all the time you do that stuff for free. You spend 20 or 30 minutes on a 2-line Facebook status, so it'll get the best laugh, like wording it, rewording it, you know? He said, you're doing that stuff for free all day. Why wouldn't you charge for it? Like, you know, if you're going to spend that much time writing stuff, try to make people laugh, write a book, and just, you know, with the way things are, you can publish your own stuff now, you know, on Amazon, publish your own books. I got a friend that does that. And I think, I think I'm going to go that route, man.
There was one story I always wanted to ask you about where, like, I remember somebody on the underground was talking about a guy that was a boxer who, like, went out there and then, like, instead of shaking hands, he just walked out of the ring. And then you said that you were so close to doing that one time.
Oh, yeah. No, my younger brother came up with an idea, because when I found out I was going to fight Mark Hunt, I thought it was a joke at first, because when I negotiated with UFC, I turned down their first two money offers, which they couldn't believe. But I was like, I'm not fighting for $3,000, like 3-3. You guys are crazy. And so I finally agreed. They gave me 8-8 for my first fight, which still wasn't great. But and I said, now my only request is I want to know who I'm fighting before I sign this deal. And they're like, well, we don't know yet. And I said, okay, well, I don't want to get served up to some monster just because I'm a 10-0, you know, heavyweight. You know, just one of your guys with a bunch of potential make me look bad. You know, like, maybe just at that time, I thought, you know, I don't want to fight Shane Carr when it came to Velasquez. Who they weren't the champ or anything yet. Like, Kane was still 3-4-0 or whatever. I think when I signed, maybe 5-0, I don't know. But I was like, I don't want to be brought in to make someone else look good. I don't need $8,000 that bad, you know? And they're like, no, it'll be another first time UFC guy. It'll be his first time in the UFC. And so I was like, okay, cool then. I don't need an opponent name, I guess. And you're just putting me in another guy who's, you know, a regional fighter who's worked his way up or whatever. We'll do that. And when I got the contract 2 weeks later for the bout agreement, it said Mark Hunt. And so I immediately texted my agent. And I said, hey, I just got this bout agreement. That's like Mark Hunt from Iowa or something, right? Like, not Mark Hunt, the K-1 world champion, right? And he's like, well, yeah, they bought out his contract from Pride. But he goes, but if you get him on the ground, you'll be fine. I was like, but if I don't, I won't be fine, you know? And he's like, I think you'll be all right, this and that. He goes, listen, he's a big name. If you beat him, you know, he's on a 4-fight losing streak or whatever it was at the time. I was like, yeah, to Fedor, Alistair Overeem, like the best fighter in the world, you know? And so I went ahead and decided to do it. Might as well go big if I was going to do it at all. So I go ahead and accept the fight. At that time, what were we just talking about? I completely lost my train of thought. There was something I was going to say.
You were going to leave your gloves in the ring,
story,
or like,
right.
Walk out.
Yeah. So, okay. So yeah. So I was thinking, I thought I had a good chance. And the more I talked to everyone around me, everyone thought I was going to get killed. Like, everyone. They're just like, dude, you're going to get murdered. If you can't get him off his feet in the first minute, he's going to knock you out. And I was like, really? Like, I didn't think, like, I thought people would have more confidence in me. I was sure I was going to win even in the fight till the first time he hit me. But my little brother came to me with a strategy. The day before the fight, he goes, man, I've been thinking about this. He said, like, if you get out there and it just don't feel right, you know, he said, like, because I'd never been beaten at that point. He goes, if you just know it's not going to go your way, either he's too fast, he's too strong, whatever. He says, wait till he, like, maybe leg kicks you or hits you really hard, like with a body shot or something. And he said, and just scream out, like, oh my God, and take off running and jump over the fence and sprint out of the arena. He said, like, sprint up. You know, the concourse and out. He said, I guarantee you, you'll be on every, literally every cable news channel, every sports channel, ESPN, Sports Center. It'll be like, you know, stories about the guy who off running from his opponent and left the arena. And he goes, that'll make you famous enough to get like a Pierre McNeely Pizza Hut deal. You remember when Pierre McNeely knocked himself out with a stuffed crust pizza?
Yeah.
Or whatever on the commercial. That was my brother. My younger brother's playing. He goes, that's what I would do. Like, he said if he hit me with a real hard leg kick, I'd be like, oh my God, what am I doing? And like yell it out so everybody can hear. Camera picks it out, takes off running, jump over the fence and sprint out of the arena. And he said, I guarantee you'll be famous. If nothing else, you can probably turn that into something. And I won't say I ever considered it, but it's the first time Mark had hit me. I thought about it for a split second. I was like, you know, I still could run and get out of here. But,
That is so funny.
Ended up working out. I'm glad I didn't do it, but that would have been plan B, I guess.
That's hilarious, dude. That's hilarious. If you would have done that, yeah, you would have been like I don't know though, because like Bob Sapp kind of does stuff like that, similar, but he doesn't run out of the ring though.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. I think if I was to run away from him, actually sprint and climb over and just take off running. I don't know.
Can you tell me that Bob Sapp has like 4 months to live, but that was like 6 years ago?
What's that?
You told me Bob Sapp had like 4 months to live, but that was like 6 years ago.
Yeah, when I talked to him, he didn't tell me that one of his best friends did. He was having liver trouble, I guess. I maybe I shouldn't say that, but he's doing all right. I talked to him still about once a month. He's for all the shit he catches, man. Sapp is one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life, and a guy who would do anything for me. Like he's done me a couple of favors. I just called him and needed a hook up on something. You know, when I was in Seattle one time, like, hey, I was dating a girl in Seattle. I was out there in Seattle. He's actually from that area, and he hooked me up with one of his buddies out there, helped me out. Like, he's hooked me up with a chiropractor out there. I had hurt my back while I was out there. I couldn't even get out of bed. And he sent me his guy and told his guy he would cover the bill. Like, Sapp is he's got probably 20 employees, man. It doesn't need any of them. He just, the way his one of his employees told me I was talking to out there, he said that Bob just feels sorry for people, so he just hires them. You know, like, he met a girl, I guess, that was just she was like a prostitute from the time she was 12 years old over there in Japan. And he met her someplace one time and got talking to her and just felt sorry for her. And so he hired her so she didn't have to, you know, be a prostitute anymore. Just hired her to, like, she carries around like his, like just a sweat towel, wipes his head off with and like feeds him when we went out to eat, you know, or whatever. She just like feeds him his food and stuff. And it's just really more or less a reason for him to give her money. You know what I mean? Cause he feels bad for her. But he told me he had, I think 18 to 20 people working for him. Any given time, and he doesn't really need it. He's got such a big heart, man. Probably literally and figuratively. But
I hate awesome.
When, I mean, I know what he was doing when he was, you know, he went on a streak of losing. But he told me, which it made kind of sense at the time. He told me, he said, man, if a promotion hires you, like, let's say, I don't know, Kazakhstan or something, and they have their local hero that they want to fight you, and they're going to pay you $40,000 to fight, but an extra $40 if you lose because they want their local guy to look good, you know? He said, that's pro wrestling to me. He said, like, you're telling me, won't you come on, put out a show out here, you know, or whatever, and we want our guy to win. He said, of course I'm going to. He said, they told me it was funny because he said they wanted him to lose to this guy, and he said, they didn't know this. I was going to lose anyway. He said, I couldn't beat that guy in a fight. He was fighting. He said, but I told him, okay, for an extra $40. I'll take a dive. He said, but to me at that point, that's just pro wrestling. He said, so I look like $1 million, you know, I try to make him look good. And,
I'm going to lose anyway.
He goes, what's the difference between that and pro wrestling? He goes, if I'm just going out there and they're paying me to the same for the promotions, paying me to lose, you know, he said, so
that's hilarious.
But maybe that's how he justifies it. But yeah, I lost it when he said it. He goes, what they didn't know is I was going to lose for $40,000, but you just gave me $80. So.
That's so funny. No, he definitely, like, I told him he's the first guy to ever merge WWE and UFC and MMA without really anyone knowing it, you know?
Right, that was awesome. It's someone had proposed that he and I fight. One of the Japanese promoters proposed he and I fight. He said, I'm not fighting you. And I was thinking the same thing at the time, but I didn't want to say it. I was too proud. But he was like, I ain't fighting that big dude, which he's, Sapp is every bit my height, if not an inch taller, and every bit as heavy as me, if not 60 or 80 pounds more, but all muscle. That dude, even to this day, man.
Wait, Sapp is your height?
Not an ounce of fat on him. So.
Wait, he's your height? Really?
He's easy 6'6", 6'7". I've got pictures of him on my Instagram. I couldn't believe it. When I saw him, I thought he'd be like, you know, Lesnar's like 6'3". So I thought he'd be like some guy like that, but that big, but he's only 6, you know, I say only, but compared to me, 6'3", is not that tall, you know. But when I saw him, he were eye level, and he may be even a little bit taller than me. So he's 6'6", 6'7". At least, which I couldn't believe. And when I saw him, it was actually kind of scary. I felt like we were the Beatles, except a black guy and a white guy in Japan. But we jumped out of a taxi, and obviously they all see him right away, and he's a celebrity over there. And he pulls his shirt off and just ripped, you know what I mean, just muscle bound ripped. And not sure when I pulled his shirt off, but everybody, probably 200, 300 people come running towards us, all grabbing him and, you know, trying to take pictures and all this. And I was just caught in the mix. It was kind of scary for me for a minute. I felt like in World War II or something. Like, you died, G.I. But I probably should have left that one out. But no, we were mobbed by people or whatever. But I asked him, Thomas, how much do you weigh right now? He goes, I'm about 390. But I mean, 390 without almost any body fat at all. Just completely just ripped. And that dude knows more about steroids than anybody you've met in your life. And I'll tell you what, he's got his master's in pharmacology or his PhD in pharmacology, literally from school. And also, I think it's street pharmacology because he can tell you anything about anything. He was the first one to tell me about something called peptides that guys are using, which is a less dangerous form of HCH. You know, it's still legal or was legal. I don't know if it is anymore, but he was telling me that, you know, like, you get the same results from that. That's what Chad Mendez got suspended for, I think, for some kind of peptide.
So what does... So what was Dillashaw taking, by the way? Like, what does EPO do for you?
What's what?
EPO? EPO?
The EPO... I would have loved to have tried it because it's like they call it liquid cardio. My understanding is it thickens your blood to a degree, like makes it really thick because it increased your red blood cell count by 2 to 3, even 4 times what your red blood cell count be. You've also got a stroke and die from it just from injecting it. I guess the guys that know what they're doing go to a doctor or whatever. It's, you know, full of blood doping. But if you've got 3 times the red blood cells, your blood can carry 3 times the oxygen to your muscles, I guess. So that would explain, like, a guy like TJ that was taking it, why he never got tired in fights, because everybody I know that ever tried it told me that it literally, you know, it's what Lance Armstrong, it's what the big one that Lance Armstrong was taking. But they said you literally, if you get tired in 8 minutes running on the treadmill, let's say 10 to make it even, like a more even number, in 10 minutes, if you get tired on the treadmill, at 8 miles an hour or whatever it is, that you could go 30 minutes before you're the same amount of fatigue, you know? And it lasts for, I guess, 4 to 5 days, the effects do. So I think you take it and then it peaks at the 3rd or 4th day and it lasts for 4 days, timing it right to where it was during a fight that they would be peaked, you know, with the most red blood cells. But also when your blood gets thick like that, you can get clots and have strokes and stuff like that. So it's a real dangerous one, like one you can die from, you know? So, it's a dangerous one, but they say the cardio results, everybody I've known that ever tried it said it is unbelievable. They're like, without any extra work or anything, all of a sudden in 3 days, your cardio is tripled, you know? So if you're tired at the end of the first round, you're not going to be tired till the end of the third, the same amount of time, you know? So, which would have been perfect for me because I got tired in about 30 seconds. So I could have fought for a minute and a half at least with EPO, but
not always. Right.
Yeah. I could go, you know, I fought a couple fights. I fought one or two to the distance, actually at least twice to the distance, fought some into the second round. I made the mistake, man, I think when I was fighting, and I made the same mistake playing basketball in college, but I didn't put the two together till later on when I wasn't fighting anymore, is that I don't think I was getting warmed up enough. I always did better. In college, I would get real tired. I'd play, you know, 38 to 40 minutes when I played college basketball, but it seemed like the first 2 or 3 minutes of the game, I had to get pulled out, like tell coach I could come out for a second just to catch my breath, and then I would feel fine. I could play the rest of the game, you know, and I wasn't getting a good warm-up, I think. And I think just my body needed that, and I don't think I was doing it. It's so hard in UFC to get a good warm-up or to time your warm-up right, because unless you're the main event or the first fight of the night, you don't know when you're fighting. I mean, it could be any time within a 45, you know, minute swing, depending on how fast the fight's before you go. So it's real hard. At least they don't tell you. If they know, they don't tell you what kind of fight. You know, you have a list, you know, a list of who's fighting when or who's fighting, but you don't know exactly when you are. So I had a lot of trouble. Like, I may get really good warmed up, ready to go, and then I got to sit for 40 minutes, you know. And you also don't want to burn yourself up, get a real good warm up, and then try to stay warm, you know, and be ready. The only time I was able to do it in the UFC was when I fought Hunt, because I was the first fight of the night. So I knew exactly, I was fighting at exactly 7:15. So, you know, I knew to get get my heart rate going, really get, you know, burned up, burn off that first, you know, bit of adrenaline, and then be ready to go out there. But that adrenaline dump stuff is real, man. That is, I never believed in that when I used to watch UFC before I was there and before I fought. But you'll be out there, you can be in phenomenal shape in 90 seconds in, a minute, or you know, 2.5 minutes in, all of a sudden just your legs feel like your arms are so heavy. It's like you can't, just the nervousness, you know, or whatever, like, it's just rough, man. But if you fight through it, it ends up, you get your second win. But, man, it can be really rough for a couple of minutes when you just feel like, sometimes right before the fight started, I'd be out there, I felt like my legs were going to give out, you know, like whatever, just from the, I don't know, just a rush, you know, before you fight somebody. It's a hard thing to do, to fight someone that you don't have a problem with, you know, like if it's not, especially in front of millions of people, like to go out there and fight someone that has, you have no problem with at all. You're not mad. You're not, you know, you don't have a reason you're fighting them other than for people's entertainment. For me, that was always hard to get into that mindset because I never liked fighting. I just was kind of good at it. So
you were not kind of good at it. You were great at it. Well, listen, Sean, I want to have you on all the time. I'm going to be in Saturday. I'm going to be in Seattle, but I'll be back Sunday. Let's go out Sunday night.
Okay, we can do that. Are you going to be at our boy's wedding?
The what? No, I got a gig in Seattle, but I'm going to be back on Sunday morning. So let's hang out Sunday night.
Okay, all right, man. That'll work. I'll see you when you get back.
All right, love you, brother.
Everybody, let's keep seeing. Trap, sons, and trap, sons, and trap, don't 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 trap